Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Dave and Deb Bauskill. Deb and Dave have founded the Planet D after cycling the continent of Africa in 2008. Since then, they've been inspiring adventure and everyone through 110 countries on seven continents. Forbes magazine named the Planet D one of the top 10 travel influencers in the world, and they've won numerous blogging and photography awards. They live by the motto, adventure for everyone. Dave and Deb share information, inspiration, and travel tips to help people plan for their travels. Here's a really interesting couple. Here is Dave and Deb Bauskill.
All right, we're here with Dave and Deb Bauskill, and we're going to talk about some adventures, man. These guys, first off the bat, before we get into like how you got started and where you guys grew up and all that stuff that we like to do in the beginning, who's the photographer around here? Your freaking Instagram page is like off the chart. Okay, Dave.
I'm the photographer.
When you were a gaffer, were you a gaffer or just rigging as a grip? What would you do in film?
I was a gaffer and a rigging gaffer. So I did that for, man, like, you know, all together in the film industry, like 15 years. So,
okay. Yeah. So you're working with a DP, you're looking at light. And that's why
I learned a lot from all the DPs that I worked with, all the on-set photographers, all those people. I was super interested in the way light interacted not only with people, but with landscapes and stuff. So that really helped translate into when I got into travel later on, how, you know, I was able to interpret that into my kind of style. So
Yeah, when he was working in the film industry, we had a whole studio in our basement. Yeah. He was taking all the photos of the neighbor's cats to,
you know, all that.
Everything, getting ready. You knew that photography was in your blood and you'd want to eventually.
It is. When you look at your Instagram page, first things realize is the light. You know, there's a great documentary on DPs called Visions of Light about great, you know, cinematographers. And when you look at your images, it's like, wow, this guy, I mean, I'm assuming has been to all these places. Dave and Deb have been to all these places. That's insane.
Yeah, all of them we've been to. Like, that's sort of the thing, you know, we pride ourselves on, is we've been able to go to all these amazing destinations, but also been able to capture them in both photos and videos. So, like,
yeah, the way we got into the travel business is that in the film industry in Toronto, we were taking winters off because back then nobody was you know, and Hollywood was coming to Toronto during the winter. Crazy. So we would leave and travel. And before we even started blogging, we had already been to 40 countries. And then once we got into it, we just traveled nonstop for 7 years. No house, no possessions, and just traveled nonstop. And eventually got to about 120 countries and still going strong, even though we've settled a little bit now.
Yes.
It's insane because you just looking at all that, you know, first of all, you're watching this from you have to wake yourself up and go, wait a second. This is not a National Geographic. This is not like the Discovery website. These people took pictures of these places. It could be exhausting just looking through all of it. And then you're like, holy shit, that's amazing.
And some of them are pretty exhausting to go out and get, for sure. You know, like, I always look at it this way. You know, I remember seeing Paul Nicklin talk years ago, who's like a really big, you know, I'm a huge fan of his work.
Yes.
And I remember listening to him talk about different areas he went to and how much time he spends to capture one image. And, you know, what we do, I'm not able to do that. So I can't go back again and again and again. To see these places, I'm there once or twice, and I have to be able to capture these images as best as I possibly can. So trying to put all your skills together and that kind of stuff to capture both photo and video when you're in these places, it can be challenging.
Right. Well, let's go back. Because first of all, it's a great story. People are driving and going, I would love to be, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's like you guys lived it. I would love to be a travel blogger. I mean, how many movies have we seen where the person's talking about that? It's like, okay, that's like, you know, it's hard to be sustainable, make money, make it your passion, actually follow through with all that, the logistics of it. Let's go back to both of you guys.
It all started from our work in the film industry. I was a makeup artist and Dave was a rigging gaffer. And, we always knew we wanted to go into travel because we were taking the winters off to travel. And our whole original idea was to pitch a TV show. And we were going to be an adventure couple that everyone could relate to. This was back in 2007. We were thinking about it. And we were like, well, how are we going to do this? And actually, a really cool thing is one New Year's Eve, we were watching one of your previous guests, Raise Ahab, talk about how he became an ultra marathon runner. And we were sitting at home feeling really depressed with our lives and how we wanted to do something epic next year, just like Raise Ahab, who changed his life. And we said, we did a toast on New Year's Eve of going into 2007, that by this time next year, we're going to do something epic.
And change our lives.
And yeah. It was exactly a year later with thinking about his story. And we did a year later, we signed up for the world's longest cycling race, where we rode a bike from Cairo to Cape Town. And we were on a plane a year later off to do that in Africa. So it really was amazing how we did it with no idea like how we were going to make it happen. We were just like, we have to do this. We hired a publicist. We bought new bicycles. We went to spin class because we weren't cyclists. And for a year we trained and then off we were. Not without like, any idea. Ignorance no, is bliss, I have
yes,
to say.
Yes, for sure.
We're in way over our heads.
It's funny because you have everybody's got their own thumbprint, and they're talking about Raise Ahab. His episode just came out today, and he was a guy that was smoking a pack a day, and yeah. he went into ultra running and all kinds of expeditions and challenges, with cancer, and he's just a remarkable person. But you guys have your own interesting fingerprint because. First of all, let's go back. Are both where? Let's start with Debbie. Ladies first, right? That's just a habit of mine. No, don't mean anything by it. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town called Otterville, Ontario, and made a big impact on the world stage, I have to say. And I was a competitive figure skater as a kid. And then I went into music theater and was a singer. And the way I got into makeup artistry is that I was always auditioning for roles on set, and the makeup artists looked like they were having the most fun outside of the actors, in my opinion. So I was like, I want to do that. And that's how I got into it. But I went into makeup for all the wrong reasons. My heart wasn't in it. I wanted to do something more with my life. And the whole time I was a makeup artist for 10 years, I was always dreaming about what I could do to fulfill my dreams. And I finally did with travel.
Okay, and as I try to find out, I'm getting at the algorithm of what built you guys. So, what'd your mom and dad do for a living?
My dad owned a car business, so they were self-employed, and my dad was really athletic. He did the senior games. He spent winters in Florida, and he always did the senior games in the Winter Olympics of seniors in Florida. So they were really an inspiration that way, and they both worked on that business together. And I think that's what made Dave and I. Really want to work together because I saw my parents always working together in this unit. They fought a lot, just like Dave and I do, but they also got through things together too.
I'm starting to see some clues here, because entrepreneurship and the outdoors and you guys working together. Okay.
Yeah.
Dave, what about you? Where are you from? What did your mom and dad do? What was your childhood?
So I grew up in my story is so like almost like the exact opposite of Deb's, in that, I grew up in suburbia in Burlington, Ontario, in a very, middle-class family with my mom and dad. My dad was he was the head of computer programming for the Hydro, and my mom was a secretary. So very blue collar workers. And for me, really, I got into music very early on, and music was a big thing for me. And I took up the drums when I was quite young, and then really got into music. So I was a musician when we met in a band, and that was sort of what my desire was to be, to my creative outlet, to get it out there and go out and play in a band. And I remember my dad always wanted me to, have a real job and have a regular job, but I just never really fit in that box or in that mold. And I think that probably, I met Deb back in 1991. So it was quite early. I was 21 years old, coming out of college. And, we're both musicians, and we just had this dream to sort of, we're on the same path, in the sense that we had this same creative desire to get out there and create and be in front of people. And I think that was a big thing that led us to where we are today.
How'd you guys meet?
We met the old fashioned way at a bar.
Yeah.
My friend Melissa, it was back in 1991, to give you an idea. So we were wearing cowboy boots at a very Canadian bar with a blue rodeo cover band. No one outside of Canada would know what that is playing. And my roommate Melissa at the time pointed at our cowboy boots and said, "You two have the same cowboy boots." And we were like, "No way." And after that, it was love at first sight. And it really was. We were, a couple of days later, we were going out and we had the love of music. We went to a Stevie Ray Vaughan cover band.
Yeah, I always say, you know, like we met on a Friday, went out on a date on a Sunday, and went to that Stevie Ray Vaughan cover band. And basically after that, it was like we had known each other all of our lives. Like it was one of those epiphany moments where you're like, wow, I can't believe I met someone that is so interesting and so like me, but so opposite, you know, but we just fit together. So I think that was, we were really fortunate.
And at that time, we both had the same love for music. I was going to school for music theater. He was in a band, and we just blended. And it's crazy that over 30 years of being together, that our interests have shifted and changed together as we go. I don't even understand how that has happened.
Well, what's going to happen later on, you guys are going to need to have that teamwork, that you're going to need to make those arguments small at the end, because in order to do what you guys end up doing, you know, you're going to have look at the bigger picture and say, okay, I'm going to let that slide, or this argument or that, working together. It's you guys are together so much, you know, it's like, so
we really are.
And what's crazy is that we weren't for so much part of our life. You know, like when we left college and we went moved to Toronto, we were there for maybe like 3 or 4 months. And then Deb got a contract singing in Guam. So she was gone. And then, you know, when she came back, we moved to Vancouver, and then she got a job in Japan. She was gone, you know, so there was a lot. And then when we got into the film industry, you know, she was doing TV. I was doing feature films. So for 8 months, I'm not around. So it was all very much not really spending a lot of time together.
We're very much an all or nothing couple. It's either all in or we hardly see each other. And for the first half of our life together, we really didn't see each other much at all. And then now we're really together 24/7. And you hit the nail on the head when you said you have to let things go. One thing we do is we don't hold on to anything in our arguments. We don't bring things back. You know, you just have the big argument and get it over with and move on.
Yeah.
This is starting to become a relationship piece, because now but this is important. I mean, you have a probable interview, and now this interview is important, because you guys weren't with each other at all. There's a lesson to be learned here. And then you guys decide we go on these vacations. You know what? Who came up with the idea first? This is what we want our life to be.
Well, it all really started back, if we want to go even farther back, in 2000, we took a 5-week trip to Thailand. I was working on a show, and I said, I was asking people, everyone's well-traveled in the movie industry, and someone said, you have to go to Thailand. And back then, I didn't know about Thailand. I said, we don't want to go. My friend Lana said, no, you have to go. She brought me a photo album, and we went for 5 weeks. And it was the hardest 5 weeks of our lives. Yeah. We were arguing, we were fighting. We realized that we had grown really apart in the past 10 years of our relationship. And we always say that 5 weeks together really brought us together. I don't think we would be together today if we didn't do 5 weeks in Thailand, because it was this emotional roller coaster of never seeing each other and spending 5 weeks together. And I'm talking like 2 weeks in, we could barely talk to each other. And we were going, I hate you, I want to go home.
And but then, it forced us to rely on each other, you know? And I think that became a real lesson for us later on in life, in that, you know, when we did end up going into business together and running the Planet D, all those lessons that we learned there about compromise and learning each other's pain points and all that kind of stuff came into a huge benefit being in business together.
And by the time we came home after 5 weeks, we were closer than ever. I had never been so in love with Dave as I had in my entire life. We had been together 10 years by then, and we changed our lives. We stopped living for work, and we started living more for the weekend and evenings out and making time together. So we were that typical relationship that was in a rut after 10 years. And then it all changed in one 5-week trip. And it really did. We have told that story many times to people about how it changed our lives. And I think after that, that's when we were always yearning, going, how are we going to make this a career? And it took us 7 years to figure it out. But it was 7 years of splitting our time between movies and travel. And eventually it became, instead of going, what movie are you working on next? People would say, oh, where are you traveling to after this movie? We became more known as the people who were going to take off and travel than the people that were going to do another movie.
Right. That dynamic, your relationship, can be, it's almost like the Zig Ziglar water pump analogy where Zig Ziglar talks about you're pumping this water and it goes up a big pipe. And I've been talking about this a lot lately, but this pertains to it. And then you don't see where the water's going. And sometimes people give up when you're stuck in a relationship, when you're in a marriage, I say stuck because you don't want to get a divorce right away. You're stuck in your 5 weeks there. You have to stick it out. And the dynamics of something happens. Sometimes you got water's pumping and then it starts to flow and you're like, oh, this is the payoff. And sometimes you leave too soon, but because you're stuck, you are stuck in a marriage sometimes because the leverage is so bad to leave. Or you guys are you guys might've been close to getting on that plane and leaving each other, but you didn't, you stuck it out. And then something magical happened where you had to, you work it out. And that's what a relationship is working shit out to make the most probable successful relationship that is possible, right?
Exactly.
My wife likes to say we were destined. I'm like, I'm so much more practical. I'm like, I think you get two people that have a good base and then you work on it together to make it the best it can be.
I think that's exactly.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, it's constant work and we're always evolving and constantly working. And I think that's about everything in life, even with our business, just exactly what you said. I think people always just give up just when they're about to have that success. And just like with relationships, they give up just when maybe if they would have stuck it out a little longer, talked to each other a little more, it could have been something beautiful.
Let's go on the journey. Okay. Now you guys get back and you say, look, this is going to be our cause celeb. This is kind of like, were you guys on the plane ride going, writing stuff down and go, this is what it's going to look like. This is what it'd be. Oh yeah, that would be great. What about that? How does this work out? What does this look like?
Oh yeah, we did.
We started with a life list before I knew about the word bucket list. We started with a life list. So we just started thinking about everything that we spent our time only working. We were only working. We were those people that worked all week, slept on the weekend, did our laundry and didn't speak at dinner. Then we started saying, what do we want to do? I want to learn how to rock climb. I want to do scuba diving. I want to do mountain biking. And yeah, we're doing everything.
Because really, when we were in Thailand, like we took up rock climbing, we tried rock climbing there and we really fell in love with it. We thought maybe this adventure thing is something that really what we're looking for. It really gave us a spark. So when we got back, yeah, we were like, I just don't want to do adventures while I'm traveling. What can we do at home that really will keep that spark going and really keeps relying on each other as well, because we ended up doing everything together. So we were still working, being apart, but we made sure every weekend or whatever we were mountain biking, scuba diving, rock climbing, doing all that together. And that was, we found this bliss and balance at that point where we're like, oh, this is amazing. But then of course, obviously it comes to the point where work is now not where I want it to be or what Deb wants it to be. So we're like, we sort of realized at the same time that, we've fallen in love with travel. How the heck can we make this a business?
Yeah.
Because we have to do this. This is something that we're destined to do. Even I used the word destiny as we talked about before, but we felt that this is something that we had to do and we had to give it time in order to make it into our business.
Yeah, we did everything. This was before blogging was a thing. We went to Belize to get our dive masters because we said maybe we'll just lead dive tours around the world. We were going to buy a bar.
We were going to run cycling tours.
We tried everything and it took us 7 years until we said, let's pitch a TV show. And that's what really started it all. That trip to Africa, we said, I think we figured it out. And so
you guys are like, maybe like, you want to be like Jason Bourne and his girlfriend before she got shot and ended up in the water. But you wanted to, you wanted to be the people that live, and maybe do a small business, but then you decide a TV show. But did that happen or
we failed miserably. We put a lot of money into the cycling race in Africa. We bought new bikes. We trained for a year. We quit our jobs. We said, we're going all in. And we told everyone we're quitting our jobs. This time next year, we won't be here. It was the best thing we did because we were
accountable then, right?
Chicken out many times throughout that year leading up to the race. But when we were on the plane, our publicist got us a lot of interviews. We did have people, a production company interested. But when we got back, we didn't know how to transition to make that happen. So
basically we were told this. We were said, look, you're nobodies. What's your hook?
It's great
that you want to be person that shows that, or this couple that shows that every man can go and do this. Cause that was sort of our thing. We were missing the mentors that were attainable. Mm-hmm. So there were always these great adventurers out there, but all the stuff that we were doing wasn't really, I didn't think was attainable for the everyman. So there wasn't someone there that could do that. Right. So, that's what we wanted the TV show to be. But because there was like Jack Osborne and all these famous people out there. doing their stuff.
Junkie, yeah. It's called. And, you know, there was a Ray Fiennes. He had a show. Like, there were all these people. So you were either a celebrity or a really well-known adventurer. And we went, how do we make that happen? And that's when we realized that we had started a blog for Cycling the Continent, and people started following our adventures online. And this was in 2008. And that's when we said, I think there might be something to this internet thing.
And the funny thing is when we started that, and when we started the Planet D, it was started basically so that we could make a name for ourselves so that we could get a TV show.
Yeah.
That's because for us, the end game was a TV show at that point, just because that's what we knew. We were in it for a long time. We thought that was the way to do it. So that was sort of the avenue that was driving us to get there. But little did we know that, you know, basically, you know, becoming a travel blogger, which is something that didn't really exist at that point in time, would be even a thing that we wanted to do or a viable business model.
How does this become sustainable? What does that transition look like to where, okay, we know the TV show, that's obviously, you know, you get somebody to pay, but how does this become to where, you know, you're able to continue this and make it a livelihood?
Honestly, in the beginning, we didn't. There was, in 2008, there wasn't a word called influencer. Twitter was just starting. We just said, I know in my heart, this is what I want to do. How are we going to make this happen? So we went back to work for a few months. We lived in my parents' trailer, no lie. We wanted to save money so that we could get back on the road again and make up the money we spent on Africa. So my parents had a trailer they used in Florida and said, you can stay there and live rent-free and go back to work. So we just read everything we could about the internet. We started our YouTube channel. We tried to make things happen and saved a lot of money. And then we just said, okay, we're leaving and we're going to give it 5 years. And we took off to India.
Sold everything we owned.
Mm. And had enough money to sustain us for about 6 months in India in the bank. Mm. And we traveled around and blogged about it, just blindly hoping people would pay attention. But we knew, like, we loved it so much. We knew that we found the right path. We just didn't know how to make that happen yet.
And we didn't know how to make money at it. Like, there was no monetization strategy at all. We knew we had to. But we figured that out along the way.
Yeah. And we nearly ran out of money when we were traveling. We were sitting in Sri Lanka after spending 3 months in India. We went to Sri Lanka and we were looking at our bank account and we didn't want to go into our life savings. We were already in our 30s when we started this. So we didn't want to go into the little money we had saved then. So we said, I think we're going to have to go home in a couple months. And we were feeling very depressed. And lo and behold, we got our first ad offer on our website. And I'm talking a tiny ad. It was someone about a sarong. They wanted to pay us $25 a month to put a text link. We didn't even know what these were at the time, a text link in our website. And we went, okay. And they're going to pay a year up front, but they want to buy four. So we're like, oh my gosh, we're going to get around $1,000 or something like that. We're like, that can give us another month. And that just gave us, just when we were about to give up, that spark to keep going. And after we spent that other month, we started getting offers for free travel. We were invited to New Zealand to do a trip. We weren't getting paid, but we were getting invited because people started noticing that we were traveling and people said, hey, maybe you can come and promote my company. So that's how things happened.
So then, like, kind of sponsored trips plus this blog is taking off. What was the particular type of niche there? The riches or the niches?
Yeah.
So what was the niche that really moved the needle for you guys?
It was adventure for sure. Like, when we started out, our first moniker was we were Canada's Adventure Couple. And our whole mantra was that, you know, the idea behind what eventually became our motto that it is today is adventure is for everyone. And that, you know, adventure is different to everybody. It can be going to a market in Marrakesh. It could be climbing to Everest Base Camp. It could be anything in between. But what we realized is that, you know, everything you go out there doing, you experience new experiences, that can be an adventure. So that was our hook. You know, that was our idea because that was our life. You know, we wanted adventure to be a part of what we were doing and everything we were doing. So we thought that was a perfect way. And we just wrote about it that way. It really resonated with people, especially, I think, at that time when sort of the definition of adventure started to change. Because it's not just the ultra people and the Sir Raina Fiennes people out there who are doing adventures, there's other people out there too. And it is attainable. And I think that as that started to shift, we started to pick up momentum. So yeah. Sort of being at the right time and riding that wave of the message of adventure is for everyone, that really all came along at a serendipitous time at all the same time.
And something we get all the time is people saying, I didn't think that I could do it until I saw you did it, because we are pretty relatable. We aren't these super fit athletes. We didn't come from a super rich families. No. It was just something we did on our own. And we started, when we climbed Everest Base Camp, people said, I knew I could, when I saw you did that, I thought I could do it too. When we climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, I saw you did it. I said, you can do it too. And that's what some of my favorite things when I hear of an epic adventure that we've done, and people have messaged me and said, I didn't think I could do it, but then I saw you and I saw the fears that you went through and the challenges you went through, but you did it. And it inspired me to give it a go as well. And that's all we wanted out of travel.
Yeah.
I get it. You guys are like the Chip and Luana Gaines of adventure. And you're the every couple that, you know, because, you know, there's the quintessential, you know, like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, like it looks like they walked off a runway, you know, and like there's posing in front of a mountain, and you guys, you know, attractive, but, you know, like every couple who said, look, you know, I can do that. And that was really probably that's what you're saying really moved it for you, was people relating in that niche, 30 somethings, you know, every couple, this is a possibility. I want to see what they're going to do next.
Yeah. We literally turned into the people that we were missing in our lives before. So the relatable adventurer that
will cry because I had to jump into the polar plunge in Antarctica, but I'm going to do it anyway. Dave's going to help me through, or, you know, that I don't want to do the stunt plane in New Zealand, but I'm going to talk about how scared I was. Things like that. Like, you watch people on TV and they just will do things, and it's like, that's fantastic that they're fearless, but most of us are terrified, and we like sharing that we're terrified.
So the blog, I mean, that could only do so much, right? Because when I think of blog, I think of there's articles, there's pictures, but like this is video intensive, right? I mean, is YouTube become your big channel? What does this go? How does this continue to grow?
Yeah. Eventually, this just filmed into a lid or morphed into a little mini production company is how we look at it. Yeah. We have everything. Dave's really an amazing photographer. I love creating videos. We write, we do the social media. And it would just be that when we start working with companies and brands and destinations, they get the whole package with us. So that's something that we do. We love it all too. When it comes to our adventures, we're masters of all trade, or jack of all trades and masters of none. When it comes to our media, we're jack of all trades. And well, he's a master of photography. But
I think really what really helped us along is that we were able to fill the void of whatever the client wanted. So they know that they could come to us for great video, great photography, great writing, social media audience, and a following that was interactive and interested in what we were doing. So, you know, we wore a lot of hats, but it filled a lot of spaces. And I think that's really what helped us move along as fast as we did, as well as getting into it when the wave was where it needed to be. So basically it came to the point where there are a lot of companies and a lot of destinations that were looking for someone who could basically do it all, and they could bring them there and have them, you know, do the job of, you know, four or five different people all in one company that basically appealed to a mass audience. Yeah. So,
and it was very easy to find us companies that we aligned with too, because we had a strong niche of adventure. So when companies were approaching us, it wasn't ever trying to have a difference of values. Even when we worked with American Express, they contacted us because we were doing the Mongol Rally from England to Mongolia. And they said, would you like to showcase how the gold card can be used everywhere? That's something we have a hard time showcasing. So that was very easy for us to work with them, because it wasn't us going, look at us, that the Ritz-Carlton and the American Express. It was us filling up, you know, our gas tank in Siberia going, hey, it's used here too, you know? Yes. So it's easy to have a hook for companies too, when they have that strong brand.
Let's use them as an example. That's interesting, because, all right, so they give you a call.
And we don't work with them anymore. Yeah. So I'm not.
Well,
I'm not,
no, but this one instance, okay. So big company, right? So they, what do you do at that point? You say, okay, yeah, we could film video. And then these are the scenarios. How do you create the spot for them, or how does that work?
For us, it's was really easy. It was just interactive. It was interlaced with the entire story. The Mongo rally took us 6 weeks. It was just whenever we would use it, it would be something very simple. Like, I can't believe that I actually used in the middle of the desert and I'm surrounded by camels, they're taking American Express. Yeah. And like, that's a really cool, fun story, you know? And then just, it was simple things like that, writing the article, making a quick video. Boy, when we were doing the Mongo rally, it was just Instagram and Twitter. Yeah. So we were just putting something up, very funny, you know, like, look at us with our, you know, we're covered in dust. He's changing the muffler that was torn off and we're at the gas station going, we can use Amex, yeah. Things like that. It's fun to find those stories and find the relatable stories.
And we enjoyed documenting it in yes. every way possible. So because we loved photography, because we loved video and we loved writing, it was very easy for us to create content. And I think that was one of the things that was never difficult. We never really had a lot of limitations, especially early on in the days with different companies, other than legal things that, you know, you can't mention this because of legal. Once you start working with bigger companies, those things come into play, but never in messaging and never in our content, which was great because they at that time really gave us carte blanche. Because truthfully, I'll say they didn't know what they were doing. With, you know, bloggers and influencers
in the early days,
there was a lot of, you know, hey, let's just see what works. And that really worked to our advantage.
Yeah, we could really take creative control.
How about, you know, scaling and time management? I mean, do you guys need virtual assistants to kind of help you with some tasks? Or do you guys try to do as much as you can to keep your costs low? Or what's that like?
Yeah, I mean, like really scaling for us is we do have people who help us out. Because there's just so much going on now for the past like 5 years that has been just too much for two people to do.
We're still quite small for most people. We like creative control. We're afraid to hand things over. I have fears of my voice getting out there and the wrong messaging. So we still are very much almost micromanagers. We're trying to work on that.
Well, it's tough because, you know, yeah, I don't know. The capitalistic side of me is like scale, make it even bigger and bigger, right? I mean, that's a natural feeling, right? So, like, in order to do that, though, you take on more. You know, I'm guessing. I mean, let me know. You take on maybe more people, more sponsors, more locations, a little bit more on the schedule. But then you got the editing, you got the writing, we need some VAs over here to kind of help out with this. But then, how do you, you know, manage them and leverage that? And what are your pain points like that? What's going on with that?
Truthfully, it's still a struggle. I mean, with time management and being able to and obviously we're kind of people like, well, we're going to make hay while the sun shines, you know, when great companies come along and great destinations come along, we're going to take that because, you know, like anything, you never know when it's going to go away, but the sun's been shining for quite a long time and we're getting tired. So we're kind of like, you know, we needed to scale back with what we were doing as far as campaigns, because the pain point or the difficulty of building a brand around yourself is it's you. So they don't want somebody else there. They want you. So we always have to be there. Yeah. So it makes it more difficult to scale because when you're the face of that particular brand of the Planet D, then people want Dave and Deb there. You know, they don't want somebody else. So you need to find other people to help you in other ways with more administrative stuff, but not the creative side of things, because that's something that your control is what made you successful in the first place.
Mm, right. Where are you at right now? Like, what does the whole, you know, operation look like? And what are you guys doing today?
Well, it's funny. Now we're in another transition right now. We're actually working on more balance and trying to get back to our roots again, because I find that the influencer space has really become saturated. I don't even enjoy looking at social media. So why do I like posting it? Which I enjoy posting it, but I feel like it's getting lost. So we're trying to figure out a way, like this 2023 is an almost back to our roots where we're going. We haven't taken any jobs or any work with anybody. We want to go and bring it back. And I think that's always important in life, to bring it back and just say, no, I am taking a step back from the whole influencer marketing, the whole working with companies and campaigns, and actually going to find myself again and see what the next chapter holds. Because I think the online world and the online space is changing so rapidly that the whole way we led in the early days was that we just followed what was right for us. What everyone else was doing was, we did an exact opposite of what everyone else is doing. And I feel like right now we have to do the what we want to do. Like our heart is saying, we're 51 and 52 years old. What is our heart telling us now? Probably a lot of people who are feeling the way we are our age feeling the same way. And if we just go hit the road with a tent on the top of our truck and see America's national parks, you know, people might be into that with us. Or if we just want to...
They will be. They will be, because a lot of people, you know who you are. You're on your way to work right now once this comes out. And you'll be sitting there going, yeah, I would like to do that. You know, and I'm the same age as Deb and Dave. And I would like to, you know, so what place have you not been already that you is like, yeah, we haven't done it yet. That's the place where we keep on talking about it. What, is there a place like that?
Yes, every time.
Yeah, we have to go to Rwanda. We haven't been that. Africa holds a really special place in our heart anyway, from like, you know, cycling the continent of Africa from Cairo to Cape Town was that was what kicked it all off for us. And we've gone back time and time again, but
say Cairo to Cape Town?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Let me just verify that. Okay, because Cairo is on the top of Africa. And from what Cape Town is on the tip of the bottom, correct?
Yeah. We went straight to the Cape of Good Hope.
Yeah, we spent 4 months riding our bikes from Cairo to Cape Town.
That's what kicked off the Planet D. So, yeah.
And we wanted to do something unique and an adventure, and we set the bar like way too high at the beginning because, you know, that's a hard one to outdo. You know, I love doing it. It was something that completely not only kicked off what we did, but it completely changed our lives. And it's something that is, we'll always talk about. It's always a conversation starter, because how many people have ridden their bikes, you know, for 12,000 kilometers or 10,000 miles in, you know, in 4 months through Africa? Not too many, I wouldn't say.
I'm thirsty just thinking about it. How did you handle the logistics of that?
It was a race. It was the world's longest cycling race. So we did have support vehicles. It was like a stage race, like the Tour de France. So basically we would get up pre-dawn because you'd be in the Sudan and it'd be 50 degrees Celsius. So very, very hot in Fahrenheit. And they would say, okay, you're riding 120 kilometers this way. We'll see you at the next camp. So we were just on our way cycling, and it was a timed stage race every day. And it was one of the most difficult things I ever did. I cried a lot on that. There were just days where I was going, I just can't do this, and drank a lot of Coca-Cola. That was
safety. What about safety? What about, you know, like going in the right, being in the right place, wrong place, or what?
Yeah,
what
I mean, there's like lots of things we went through, chased by wild dogs. I was chased down by a baboon.
It sounds funny when he's chased by a baboon, but they're vicious. And if they caught him, he could have been in serious trouble.
And a lot of times,
tear you apart. Baboons are like,
crazy.
Yes, exactly. It was terrifying. But for the most part, something we found is the people in Africa were so giving. When they saw you cycling alone, like I was often alone in the middle of the desert, they would stop and, you know, you'd have broken language talking to each other. They'd offer you tea, and they were just so helpful and wonderful and warm that I never felt afraid at all.
No.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It really reinforced why we loved travel and reinforced that we made the right decision to do this just by cycling through these countries. Or, you know, like you think about it, there's someone on a bike racing, riding through Ethiopia, and people are running beside you. Like I remember climbing hills in Ethiopia, and the kids are running faster than I can ride my bike, but they're riding beside me the whole time up the side of the hill, you know, giving me encouragement. And it gave you such a wonderful feeling in that there was your own cheerleading club there everywhere you went, cheering you on. It was kind of like being in the final stage of the Tour de France, riding into Paris, but every day. So it was pretty amazing, you know.
So what's the place that we didn't never get onto? What's the place that's still on that list?
Yeah, we're seeing the gorillas in Rwanda, Uganda, and the Congo. We have yet to do it. Look at you. Yeah. Amazing.
My favorite animal, the gorillas. Did you get, you haven't done that yet, or have you seen gorillas? And
I don't know why we haven't made it happen. We've been very, you know.
That's in the Congo, right? You got to go to the Congo for that.
You can do the Congo or Uganda or Rwanda. So we'd actually like to do the triangle and do all three. And the funny thing is we have contacts there. We have friends there. And we keep saying we have to get there, and life gets in the way. And we're not listening to our own mantra of do it. Just do it now. Yeah. So that's a place that we'll probably get to this year. as we live the life of, you know, our me year, it's our yes year of doing it all exactly. Finally.
adventure is for everyone. That's your, that's another mantra that you have.
It definitely is.
What are you going to do?
Takeover, you know, and if we weren't going to work in the Congo or work in Uganda, that would just keep falling lower on the list.
You can't ride your bikes through the Congo. What do you do out there? You just go, you know, you got to be quiet and sit there in a bush and, you know.
You trek out there.
Yeah.
It can be a 2-hour trek to a 4-hour trek to an all day trek, depending on how long it takes to find them. So we have had friends that have done it. They're, you know, giving us a hard time that we haven't done it yet. But you go and you do some safaris, just like going into Tanzania or into Kenya, and head out into the bush on a truck and then get off and start trekking through the bush.
Yeah. Have you talked to gorilla experts about saying, look, you know, like this, we want to be able to like, can you get close to them or how does that work?
Oddly enough, we have spent some time with one of the foremost gorilla experts in the world, Ian Redman. I don't know if you know the name, but he,
Diane Fossey,
he was spending time at a guest house in India with us, where we were spending $3 a night on a guest house. And there was this man that was very refined that came in for dinner. Yeah. And we're looking at him and I'm talking to him saying, you look very familiar. Have you been on TV? And he was very coy about everything. And he started talking about blogging. So I started giving him advice on blogging, which was hilarious when I look back in retrospect.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't know how to blog. And I'm like, oh, I'll
help. And his wife, he doesn't know what he's doing.
It turns out that this is a man who, he has taken Richard Attenborough out to see the gorillas. Whenever there's a gorilla problem in the news, he is the person they call. He was in Gorillas in the Mist. He was the actual person that taught Sigourney Weaver everything about gorillas.
So, that's where I'm familiar with the, I know the guy that
produced
the
movie. It was incredible. And he enjoyed our guest house so much. He was staying at the really expensive one down the road. He ended up just moving and staying with us in our area for a week or two. And that just, you know, says something about people like that, that they just love the experience more than sitting in like, you know, the 5-star hotel. They were loving this place we were at.
So that's most likely the next adventure.
Yes,
that
would
be the big adventure. Yes, that's the next one we have on our list.
Now, like Raise a Habab, do you guys bring people with you on these, or just you guys plan this out yourself and you just kind of document it yourself and put it out there as content, or do you guys do adventures and stuff with other people, expeditions?
We don't bring anybody with us. It's all just us creating content and going out there and experience it. Believe me, we've been asked quite a few times to either run tours, like lead tours, organize tours, anything like that. But the bandwidth just hasn't been there to do it for us at this point, because we've been so busy with the other parts of the business. So, but you never know, that could be down the road. I mean, later on as as we're shifting now, like we're at a shift point now. So
it
after
won't be
this
for
year,
at least a year. We want to give ourselves a year of figuring out where we want to go next, but we've had, you know, lots of ideas about leading some tours in the future, but not in the next year.
Good segue. Big picture, 5, 10 years or 15 years. What does the future look like? Do you guys talk about that and say, this is sitting out there, or do you guys not plan as a more Zen-like and Taoist than that? What does the future look like?
It's funny because we were always very much about planning where we want to be in the next 5, 10 years. And I don't know, maybe it was COVID that made things change. Right now, I'm kind of not sure where I'm going next. How about you, Dave?
I'm kind of happy that I don't know where I'm going next. You know, like all these years of doing this and the Planet D has been, things have been somewhat structured, and like our year, we could plan out a year, no problem, in advance. 2 years, we knew where we wanted to be with the blog. We knew what we wanted to do with social media. But because we're looking forward is not so mapped out or so clear right now, I find it like, for me, it would be a detriment to say where I'm going to be in 5 years, because, you know, I don't need to have that goal. I want to see where the road takes me at this particular point.
Asked me 2 years ago, I'd say I'd want to do this for the rest of my life, and I want to scale and, like, just like you were saying, have tons of writers on hand and have done my video editors, you know, more people, more and more. Now I'm kind of going inward more, going, where do I want to be? Maybe it's just the thought of mortality in my mind and things, but I'm starting to slow down and go, where do I want to be? That's really authentic and really, soul enriching and changing the world. I'd like to you know, change the world like the way I felt travel changed us for a little bit at a time, inspire some people to get that change happening in the next phase of their life as well.
It's beautiful. It's like a tapestry of pop culture as far as Chip and Luana Gaines meets like Eat, Pray, Love meets like Kane from Kung Fu. You guys are
there. You go.
You guys don't know where you're going, but you know where you're going. I love it.
Please, oh, thanks.
Tell everybody how they can find out more about you.
Yeah, you can find out all about us on our website, theplanetd.com, or we're The Planet D on every channel, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, you name it. We are The Planet D. So look for that. You'll find us.
We're Dave and Deb. It's how we see the planet.
I love it. Dave and Dave Bauskill.
Bauskill.
That's it.
Bauskill. That's right. I want to make sure. It's unique. What is that, French?
It's actually Scottish, believe it or not.
That was my 15th guess.
Yeah. Mine too.
A pleasure,
we thought he was Irish for the longest time.
You guys are having a good time.
Yeah? We are. There's no doubt about it. And every day we wake up and say, hey, we do pinch ourselves and look back. And we're a little bit more reflective now as you get into our 50s, a little bit more reflective on our life and what we've been able to accomplish and what we've been able to do together. And every day we're thankful for what we've been able to see in this world and what we've been able to accomplish together.
You know, before this, I always used to think that only really famous people, or I don't know, people born into it, could live the life they've always wanted. And then once it happened to me, it was this realization that no, we all have the capacity. I can't believe it happened. I'd never really thought, like, it was well into my 30s that I finally started living my dream. And I always really thought it was over. In my 20s, I was having a nervous breakdown that life was over, you know, like I didn't fulfill my goals.
Yeah.
And then to have that happen now, it's just unbelievable to me. And like, that's what we really just want to tell everybody, that you can live your dreams no matter where you are in life.
Well, you guys permeate that. and it's infectious, and I love it. And thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Too.
Yeah. You thanks so much for having us.
Yeah.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
That was traveling adventure couple Dave and Deb Bauskill. Here's a great quote about traveling. The world is a book, and those who do not travel read only one page. St. Augustine. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hanging out with you all in the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.